Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're talking about sulforaphane, which I believe is one of the most exciting nutrients in the integrative medicine armamentarium. It harnesses the chemo-preventive benefits of cruciferous vegetables. And I don't think this is just a passing fad. I believe that sulforaphane's value is substantiated by numerous scientific studies. As our guest today is capably informing us, he's Dr. David Hasse. He's Chief Medical and Innovation Director for Zymogen. It's a leading nutraceutical company. And he's also a physician in private practice and a leader in this field, a teacher as well, two doctors in the field of functional medicine. So, I think it's pretty well acknowledged that sulforaphane has chemo-preventive properties. We're not saying that, you know, take sulforaphane and your tumors will dissolve. It doesn't work that way. It may be a great adjunct to patients who want to prevent a recurrence of cancer. Perhaps they've been successfully treated, but they're worried that they have a chance that cancer may come back, or they may have a family history strongly suggestive of cancer risk. Sulforaphane's a good bet as part of your supplement portfolio. But then there's a whole new range of applications of sulforaphane in terms of neurodegenerative disorders. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. So as we discussed in the earlier podcast, that sulforaphane has a huge number of metabolic activities, and one of those is to turn up the NRF2 gene cassette pathway. Well, this turns on our ability to clean up oxidants. And many of our neurodegenerative conditions have oxidation as a central aspect. That oxidation, think of it as rusting of the molecules as a result of our internal combustion engines inside our cells maybe misfiring. And so sulforaphane is very potent at turning on the antidote to cleaning this up. Think of it almost like smokestack scrubbers. And so in the realms of neurodegenerative conditions, anything you can do to decrease oxidative stress, you're probably going to see some substantial benefit. One of the clinical studies I think is more interesting in young people, looking at autism, actually, which has some incredible parallels to neurodegenerative disease. With high dose sulforaphane, they were able to improve social skills, improve communication ability, and have changes in behavior with sulforaphane.
That was a really remarkable study. That really knocked my socks off.
Yeah. When you really start to take a look at this diet, gut, brain axis, and you know, so what we bring in our mouths and how much of a difference. But this was a very high dose study. This was not another serving of broccoli a day. This was a lot of high concentration sulforaphane. And then another interesting study showed that the amount of benzene that was removed from Chinese residents was doubled, meaning that their blood levels of environmental benzene exposure went in half, and the amount of benzene metabolites coming out in the urine doubled.
So it's a detoxifier,
because it also upregulates the production of glutathione, which is our body's master antioxidant, and which is incredibly important in the production of energy itself. So sulforaphane works in so many different ways to improve energy, to detoxify, and to decrease oxidative stress. And every one of those are major avenues of injury in the neurodegenerative process, be that Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, bipolar disease, schizophrenia, autism, all of those have very high oxidative stress burdens associated with them.
Mm-hmm. And in a recent podcast that I did with Dr. Leo Gallant, you know, presumably you're very familiar with him, he's author of The Allergy Solution, he declared sulforaphane one of his favorite nutraceuticals for quenching allergies. And I guess that's absolutely along the lines of helping to process and expunge toxins, you know, that helps, you know, people, the whole theory about allergies is my cup runneth over, you know, the theory of the allergic load. If the insults surpass your body's ability to resist them, and rid your body of these reactive substances, then your cup runneth over and you have allergic symptoms. He really favors sulforaphane as one of the components of his allergy proofing program.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sulforaphane is probably one of the single most important concentrated foods that you can bring into your body. It certainly ranks right up there with curcumin. I think actually before curcumin in my book, as one of the most remarkable things to bring into the system to augment health and on the whole.
So let's pause for just a moment to let one of our sponsors share this message. Here it goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our discussion with Dr. David Hasse about sulforaphane. David, you know, reality check here. A lot of people disdain the taste of broccoli. And, you know, some of it's just like, you know, uneducated palate. Maybe you're raised on junk food. But there actually seems to be a genetic predisposition to bitter tasting, and that increases the tongue sensitivity to the intense flavors of plant polyphenols, which of course are beneficial, but nonetheless, people have an aversion. So, clearly there's need for a workaround, because this would deny them the benefits of all these wonderful properties in cruciferous vegetables.
Absolutely. You know, what's fascinating is that bitter is one of the tastes that protect us from things that may be toxic. And so certainly the bitter foods, the astringent foods are ones that we maybe, it's actually been a benefit in our history to not want to consume those on a regular basis. But that's a big problem, because those same foods, when we take a non-toxic toxin in, provide a lot of benefit. And what I mean by a non-toxic toxin is sulforaphane has this property of acting like a toxin without damaging anything. So it turns on the cell signaling mechanisms. It basically causes this protein called KEAT to leave NRF2. So NRF2 can go tickle the genes and create a host of various effects. That same KEAT protein will be activated with many toxins. So by taking sulforaphane and sulforaphane glucosinolates in at really meaningful doses through supplementation, I think we can do a lot of good for people and do a lot of good long term. I love the title of your podcast. I really love Intelligent Medicine. And this is intelligence. This is looking long-term, thinking strategically about one's health, and thinking a little bit on a regular basis. So some very targeted interventions have a high likelihood of producing a positive benefit and a very low likelihood of causing an adverse effect. Those things are intelligent, right?
Indeed. Well, thank you. But the dilemma for me has been, and I think you're well acquainted for this, because you are Chief Medical and Innovation Director for Zymogen, which is a supplement company, and there are sulforaphane wars going on right now in the nutritional industry. Each company attempting to demonstrate that their form of sulforaphane is superior. Now, keep in mind, as far as I know, you cannot put pure sulforaphane in a capsule. Is that correct? Because it's a compound that's an intermediate compound that needs to be metabolized. So can you explain, you know, and it has to be harnessed, by myrosinase, right? You need the precursor to sulforaphane to be harnessed by this enzyme, myrosinase. And to my mind, myrosinase is something very unstable. It's kind of hard to freeze dry it and put it in a capsule. So where do we turn, and what's your opinion of this?
Yeah, and you're right. There's a lot of opinions, and you know, my little hobby is cognitive bias. That's what I really enjoy talking and thinking about a lot. And everybody has a bias to believe what they believed before, because that's the easiest thing for our brain, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what's number one, we want to look where the data is. I think Johns Hopkins has done a lot of the work here to kind of quantify what is important. Sulforaphane content or sulforaphane potential is one of the ways that this has been elucidated. And I can say that Zymogen's Oncoplex, which was a formulation, was actually compared directly with broccoli sprout extract. So there's broccoli sprouts, there's broccoli seeds, and those were shown to be equivalent. So the broccoli sprout extract is what has been used in many of the studies. Sulforaphane is starting to be available. There are some stabilized forms that can be directly available. If you really want to go to the details, you want to ask, well, you know, how many approximate true milligrams of sulforaphane may be present and bioavailable. And the nice thing is this can be measured through urinary metabolites. But I think it is there's certainly a buyer beware challenge here, because you'll see some products that are just, oh, here's your broccoli sprouts, here's our broccoli extract, and there may be no sulforaphane in there whatsoever.
How do we know that it's viable after the harsh processing that is necessary to turn it into a powder or a freeze-dried ingredient? You know, it seems like a living ingredient that is kind of hard to encapsulate.
And in the challenges of putting myrosinase in the capsule, believe me, we have there are many individuals looking at doing this, and Zymogen spent a lot of time and money doing qualification studies to say what are the actual compounds in those products. And I can say with certainty that the levels that are claimed on the label are the active levels that are in the bottle there. But these are really challenging studies when we're looking at how does this compound that's in a capsule intersect with not just what you eat with it, but the microbiome of that particular individual is highly variable. So I'm a big fan of end product testing. I mean, I do a lot of 8-OHDG and isoprostane measurements, or measurements of oxidative stress. And I've been really impressed to see those end molecule injury patterns improve with high dose sulforaphane therapies. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, as we're, and you know, I do a lot of work in metabolomics and proteomics as well, so with a research level. And what we're learning about the complexity of the human system is that to have really great answers, we're going to have to test. And before we can test individuals, we should go on the data that is coming out of the groups that know the most about this.
Mm-hmm. And the material used in the Oncoplex and the Oncoplex ES product are basically identical to the materials used by the Paul Talalay group. Now his son, I think, has taken over the work, because Paul Talalay's ancient.
That's correct.
And the work is originally developed at Johns Hopkins. And Johns Hopkins also made and continues to make, I think, a product that is available at natural grocers and at large health chains, which is called Brocco Sprouts, right? Brocco Sprouts is a live sprout product that is said to be bred to generate the highest possible levels of sulforaphane.
Correct. And you're going to see a lot of you're going to see a lot of new innovations coming in over the years, and I think it's wonderful.
Beverages in various forms of this,
Yeah, and I think that, and the more data we have, the more I think this story is very much going to show that this is a highly safe, supportive strategy for dietary and genetic expression improvement.
Okay, and so full disclosure here that I use this product, but I've private labeled the product. It goes under the name sulforaphane, and there are two versions. One is sulforaphane, which is, I think, a 30 milligram per capsule, and the other is sulforaphane ES, which is extra strength, which is heavy-duty sulforaphane, more expensive because it's more concentrated. And they're available through my store. If you click on store at drhoffman.com and register for FullScript, that'll provide you with what I believe is the most potent source of sulforaphane currently on the marketplace. Now, can you distinguish between those two products, the 30 milligram and the 100 milligram? Is one, you know, for the sake of economy, a person maybe interested in prevention could use that, take one or two a day, but maybe someone with a neurological disorder or after surgery for prostate cancer or breast cancer might up the ante and go for the ES product? Is that sort of how that sorts out?
Again, ideally, you test to kind of decide how much for one individual. And you certainly, we want, every time somebody's taking a capsule, we want to educate them about this and use that always as a trigger to remember to eat the raw material that mm-hmm. is made from, if possible.
So you want to diversify your portfolio. Doesn't make much sense if you're, you know, just to take the capsules. You want to include these foods in your diet.
And what's remarkable about that is because those foods in the diet are going to accelerate the activity of what's in the capsule. So the foods, so the myrosinase and the way the microbiome is encouraged, you're going to get more bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you, with my individuals with autism and Alzheimer's, I will use two twice a day of that very high potency form that you said. In extreme circumstances, and we'll be tracking along now. Outside of, and you know, it's fascinating. Sulforaphane has some good data that it actually inhibits Helicobacter pylori.
Oh, okay.
So we're, you know, the data is kind of thin on that, so we don't want to make any claims. Mm-hmm. But as far as this being healthy for the gut and tolerable, it's a very tolerable therapy. I would say that virtually everybody. Because we live in a toxic world, would benefit from a 30, and mm-hmm. one a day is my typical recommendation for people.
For general prevention. And that's mm-hmm. a more economical path for people who don't have anything seriously wrong with them. So, all right, a little food combining advice makes sense here, because we know that the precursor to sulforaphane, which is the glucoraphanins, are found in all the cruciferous vegetables, but particularly Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, bok choy, kale, collards, Chinese broccoli, broccoli rabe, kohlrabi, mustard, turnip greens, who eats those? That's a little hardcore. Radishes, arugula, one of my favorites, and watercress. Don't forget watercress. But the myrosinase, which is kind of the transformative enzyme, that little research I did shows that, yes, it's found in daikon, it's found in ordinary red radishes that you get at the supermarket, fresh radishes, but also in horseradish, which is something that adds a nice tangy flavor to certain foods. Anything else in terms of myrosinase content that might be a good combo with the
cruciferous vegetables? There is myrosinase in cruciferous vegetables as well.
So it's a little bit built in already.
Yeah, there's a little built in. And also our gut microbiome has a huge part to play, as you mentioned earlier, in this processing capacity. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to think just about what we're bringing into our diet. But I'll tell you, it's, even before having, there are some people who will not touch a radish, who will not eat yep. any broccoli, right. who will still take these capsules. And I can tell you the metabolic changes that we see on improvement of oxidative stress are very real, are quite consistent, so while we absolutely want to encourage more fresh, colorful, organic fruits and vegetables in the diet. These
it might be challenging with an autistic child, for example. They're finicky in terms of kids to begin with are finicky, and those kids are kind of single-minded about the types of foods they'll eat.
Yes. Yes, and so opening those capsules and disguising them in some type of other component works quite well. As a product, it's not terribly bitter, even as the powder is concerned.
Good. So one other concern, and it's a real concern, and I think a lot of people who are aficionados in this field are aware of this, and it's a question that they'll raise. If you eat all these cruciferous vegetables, or if you take capsules that contain components of cruciferous vegetables, can you inhibit your thyroid function? That has been the specter has been raised.
Yeah. Oh, that has been certainly. We're talking about this idea of goitrogens.
Yes.
And goitrogens as molecules that will inhibit thyroid signaling. And cause goiters to occur. Absolutely, that occurs in the extreme, and especially in areas with nutritional depletion. But we just had a great round table about this with several experts in the field, and we're asking, has anybody ever actually seen this have clinical effect? And none of us, especially you understand, we take care of people who eat a tremendous amount of broccoli and cruciferous vegetables, but the idea that you can do too much to cause thyroid dysfunction is certainly not a high concern in this realm. I think goitrogens have been really overdone. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who like to feed on fear, and you find one thing that's bad, and everybody wants to make sure we're responsible to warn people about what could be a downside. However, this is not one that's really panned out to be a very big concern.
It's not clinically relevant to the levels we're talking about, right?
Yeah, and not really. Always open to new data showing that this could be the case. But it has not been my observation in many years of using this product at high dose in many people. And I think that actually the benefit of thyroid function by decreasing oxidative stress is so outweighs a theoretical concern of this being a goitrogen that the balance of benefit to risk certainly favors sulforaphane.
I agree with you, but I'll share with you a very interesting case, but it kind of illustrates your point, which is you'd have to take enormous amounts to create a problem. And this was written up, I think it was in New England Journal. An 88-year-old Chinese woman was found by her family to be lethargic. She was unable to walk or swallow for 3 days and was brought to the emergency room. It was discovered that she had consumed an estimated 2 to 3 pounds of raw bok choy daily for several months in the belief that it would help control her diabetes. Tests revealed her to have almost no thyroid function at all. In fact, I think I recall that she had a TSH of like 600. Normal is less than 5. She recovered completely with administration of thyroid hormone. And there are a couple of species of cruciferous vegetables. Not all kale, but what is called Russian or Siberian kale. And it's hard for you to know what you're getting when you get, kale smoothies, for example, where potentially you could have a lot of, say you do a kale smoothie day in, day out, it's the wrong kind of kale, it's relatively high in the thyroid suppressive chemicals. They say you'd have to consume all that raw and in amounts greater than a kilo per day for several months to create a problem. So I think that's more of a theoretical concern than,
That's really a great case, and but it would be fascinating to know if she was in one of the areas of China that's also known for being selenium deficient, because if she was eating that food and it was raised somewhat locally, she would also develop a selenium deficiency, which does also impair thyroid function. Uh-huh. She could also have a mild iron deficiency, which is now going to contribute, again, another factor. So I always love the fact that things are usually more complex than they see on initial examination. That's a great case. And then I'm going to be careful not to eat more than a pound of bok choy a day.
Right. You have to go to about 3 pounds. And I don't know, you're probably metabolically more robust than an 88-year-old woman, so you might withstand even that challenge.
I just wanted to mention turnip greens. You know, we're in the South here, so you know, turnip greens are a major source. They're a fine food, so let's not discourage people from getting some hefty turnip greens in their diet. So.
How do you prepare turnip greens? Because you know, I generally chop them off and discard them, but you know, you're down there in Tennessee where you know soul food is in the mainstream. So what's the traditional way of preparing turnip greens?
Again, it would be steaming. Any of these really rough greens, which I think are the mainstay of a great diet. The more really rough greens you can get into your system, the better off your microbiome is going to be on so many different levels. And so my favorite way is to put about a half a cup of water in the bottom of a pan, a massive amount of turnip greens, boil that water for about 5 to 8 minutes. It takes a little bit more. These are really, really tough leaves. Mm-hmm. And then drain the water. Just pour olive oil over that in immense quantities.
And that actually, the olive oil, since some of these nutrients are fat soluble, it may harness them and make them more bioavailable because they are fat soluble.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe a little sea salt and rock and roll.
Garlic.
Yeah. And also some fresh tomatoes. Throw some fresh tomatoes in there and lovely.
All right. Well, I'm not gonna discard those turnip greens anymore. So, do we have any final words in terms of a take-home message, or are there any resources that you want to share with listeners, places that they can visit to learn more about sulforaphane?
I think you know you probably have information on your website. I think thinking about how do you bring more cruciferous vegetables into your diet. In ways, certainly in forms that are organic and are stressed. If you can buy them from your local farmer's market, that's going to do tremendous good for you on all kinds of levels. I would encourage people to think about being upstream with regard to their health care. And I think sulforaphane is one of those very most upstream molecules that exist in our nutritional armamentarium. It may not be super sexy. You don't take it like caffeine and go, "Woo-hoo, I have all this energy." But it's doing some real fundamental good deep down. So I'd love to think about the long term. Think about acting intelligently and upstream as you nurture yourself for years to come.
And I'll add this one final selling point for sulforaphane. Check this headline out. Sulforaphane, a phytochemical in broccoli sprouts, ameliorates obesity. Okay. Again, preliminary work in animals, but researchers fed mice high-fat food supplemented with sulforaphane. The other group got high-fat food without the sulforaphane. The researchers found that the mice fed with sulforaphane exhibited the weight gain rate 15% lower than that of the mice fed without sulforaphane. So if that isn't the ultimate selling point, melt the pounds off effortlessly with sulforaphane. No, I'm not sure. Again, you know, it's a detoxifier. It makes sense that it might support metabolism, but don't forget diet and exercise in your efforts to lose weight.
Really, if we step back and think about where could sulforaphane be helpful, if you decrease oxidative stress, you are improving the function of your mitochondria. Those are the energy factories of your cells. And so you're improving cellular health. And this is why we see data that supports improvement with cancer, with arthritis, allergies, diabetes, muscle growth, obesity, neurodegenerative disease, allergies, I've already mentioned. It's crazy. And you think, well, that must be a panacea. No, it's nature. You know, it was just one of the ways that humans have interacted with their environment over the course of a long period of time, and to a beautiful end. So, Ron, thank you very much for having me on the show, and I appreciate your work in the world.
And yours, and keep up the great work, because you're getting the word out about some very, very important developments in the field of nutritional medicine and functional medicine. Thanks for your efforts in teaching doctors and the lay public about the benefits of some of these breakthrough supplements. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.